Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
You're listening to Over the Influence. I'm your host, Arielle Lori. I'll be talking to movers and shakers in the world of wellness and beyond, and people who have had their own interesting journey, whether it be physical, mental, spiritual, or professional. Thanks for joining. Let's get into it. Welcome to the podcast. I hope everyone is having a great week. I'm not really going to do any kind of intro for this week's episode because it's really just a continuation of my conversation with Alexis Haynes. So if you didn't listen last week, you can go back and listen to that. And in this episode, we just delve a little deeper into her recovery. We talk about detoxing in jail in great detail. She gets really candid. We talk about relationships with older men. We talk about, God, we just covered a lot of ground. So without further ado, Alexis Haynes. Is there a moment like when you think about your sobriety, where you can remember that the obsession was gone?
Because
I know people in early sobriety ask me, like, when am I going to stop thinking about it? And like, people DM me all the time and they just can't wrap their head around a life without drugs or alcohol.
You know,
and I think it's important to give hope where we can.
Yeah. I feel really fortunate that, you know, and I don't know how else to say this to people because I feel like when I talk about spirituality, everybody shuts down, you know, like that they have to go to church or whatever. But when I, so I did the steps, which were great, and, you know, and I don't even go to AA meetings anymore. I don't even go to AA. I haven't in years. And I feel better. Don't take advice from me.
There's no right.
There's no right or wrong way. I think that for me, the obsession was lifted. I'd spent my entire life trying to check out. And when I developed a really strong spiritual practice and I really fell in love with checking in, that that desire to check out was lifted. Yeah. And so I've had surgeries. I've had life-threatening events. I've had so many times where I've had to take prescribed medication. I had a C-section. I've had elective surgeries. I had 3 blood clots in my lung and almost died. I've had I've had many experiences where I've ended up having to take prescribed medications. And not once have I ever gone, like, how do I get more of that?
Yeah.
In fact, my thought is always, like, how the hell do I get off this shit as fast as possible? Because I hate feeling out of it and out of control. And so, you know, I think that a spiritual practice is kind of, it is the solution for me. I mean, that's what has ended my constant state of dis-ease, you know, being, you know, in discomfort in the world is feeling grounded and the things that I do, you know, like I said, like Reiki, I've got my crystals, meditation, spiritual teachings, you know, and you don't, that's the thing that I always want to reiterate to people is like everything that I have, you already have inside of you right now.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to learn how to tap in and access that.
Yeah. And I think we kind of all want like the easy way, yeah. right? And the shortcut. And if we could take a pill and make it go away, mm-hmm. then let's do that. But the thing with, the thing with a spiritual practice is like, it enhances your life in so many ways
yeah.
that you can't even like begin to think about, especially like when you're just getting sober. But even if like you're not getting sober and you just are feeling depressed or like, you know, dealing mm-hmm. with something hard, there are so many things that you can do to enhance your life that way.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember my sponsor saying to me in early recovery, like, whoever told you getting on the spiritual path was the easy path is a liar. Like, it's absolutely not easy to surrender to the discomfort and to be okay with not being okay in the beginning. It's really hard. But the growth at the end of it is so profound and so beautiful and so worth it that and that's the sweetness, you know, that's the sweetness of life. I also think that we're in a world now where we're programmed to think that we always have to be okay and happy, and that's just like total and utter bullshit. Like, that's just not the way life was meant to be. Like, life the way that we're currently living in this fast-paced, technology-driven life is not sustainable. But, you know, and saying that we're, and it's telling us all the time that we're supposed to be happy. And the truth is that we're supposed to enjoy the moments, the happy moments, and every moment just the way that it is. You know, and we spend so much time going, this should be better and this should be better and I should be feeling this way. And it's like, but no, like this moment is just right now. This is all that we have. And so I hold on to the sweet moments with my children. I hold on to the sweet moments with my husband. I hold on to the sweet moments I have in connection with my spiritual practice. And then I just realized that I'm going back out into the real world and I'm going to grind and I'm going to hustle for probably, I don't even know how many more years, my husband too. And then we're going to retire and then we're going to get to enjoy maybe more sweet moments than we are right now when we're in this hustling phase. I think especially for like our generation, we grew up as kids just with very little understanding of like how hard it was to actually be an adult and to work because we never had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like a shock when you actually do get into the real world, and it's fucking depressing. And for a lot of people, it's crippling, which is why I think so many young people are still living at home with their parents.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so bad these days. Mm-hmm. It's like, they're not even young anymore.
No, I mean 30-year-olds.
Yeah,
I mean 30-year-olds. You know what I mean? Like, and you can blame it on whatever you want. But the reality is, and yes, while there needs to be a living wage, and while there needs to be access for more people to go to college and better education and all of these things, I think that's a contributing factor, but I also think that, you know, when these young 19-year-olds come into our rehab, which is not cheap, you know, they don't even know how to put together a resume. You know what I mean? Like, we're failing generation after generation of kids. Mm-hmm. So we got to do something about it.
Yeah. And like, why get a job when you could just take photos and be an influencer. And be an influencer.
Which, let me, okay, Ariel, don't, I mean, how much time do you think you spent a week on social media? Like just
be, like, actually on social media,
like,
or
planning your posts and doing, like, playing the game?
I mean, so, like, last weekend, the holiday weekend, I went into creative mode and I was working 9 hours a day, mm-hmm. for 3 days straight. Mm-hmm. And then during the week, it's from 7:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then I take a break in the afternoon, and then, like, I'll be working, like, doing something, mm-hmm. towards my work, whether it's emails or planning content, mm-hmm. or thinking about content or whatever. Usually until, like, 9:30 yeah. or 10.
Okay.
It's all
so
the
I think
time.
That these little girls that, like, just post selfies and have a million followers,
it's,
you know,
so,
like,
annoying.
Okay, it is annoying, because what I'm trying to do is to use social media to, like, better the world, right? Like, my Instagram is like a blog, and it is a full time job. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, like,
and you,
I was,
feel it personally, right?
Yes.
It's, which makes,
absolutely.
It even harder.
And it takes, like, time away from my kids, yeah. and from my life. So I'm sitting there on Planoly, like, scheduling all of my photos, writing content for an hour's. What, girl?
You have unum. It's the same thing.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So
Kennedy's here,
the...
by the way, everybody.
I've been quiet this entire time.
So, yeah. So, you know, up there, like, you know, my stories I do in live time, in real time, most of the time, unless I'm somewhere where I don't want people knowing where I am, then I post it later. But mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's like real time, right? So, but I'm on there writing content. It's a lot of work. But, you know, my husband always says, like, no money's easy money. And if you think that money's easy money, like, there's always a price. Mm-hmm. There's always a price, whether it's your dignity or whatever, there's always a price. So
that's true.
You know, it's a
wise
lot of
words from
from Mr. Evan Haynes.
You guys met in recovery. Right?
We did. We met in AA. Yes, we did. And
AA, dating,
yeah,
pool.
We met in AA. I was just maybe 8 months sober, 9 months, 9 months sober. Well, we met from the beginning, but we started dating when I had about 9 months. And then 8 months after that, we were married.
Yes.
And we've been married for 7 years. We have 2 kids and we're just, like, madly in love. And, you know, so the 13th step worked for us. you know, I can't, I don't, to each his own. For us, it really worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
and we're happy. Yeah. Right.
So far. Did not for me, but that's okay.
Oh.
I love your little
comments. There's always next time.
Worked for like 3 years,
yeah,
and then,
well,
we broke up. So there's that.
Just, you know, find a guy who has 6 months sober. Just kidding. That was bad advice. No, you know what it was? Evan had 5 years. And in early recovery, like I said, like, I just, a couple of months in, I just really dove in and did the work, and I kind of escaped for like 4 months and just really just threw myself into personal growth. And I was going to school to become a drug and alcohol counselor. And, you know, I came back, he says, I came back a new woman.
Oh.
So.
You went from a girl to a woman.
I did. I went from a girl to a woman.
I love it. And he's quite a bit older than you.
He is. Yeah. We've got a little over 15 years apart. And
not the best.
It is. It really is.
We've,
you know,
talked about
I'm
this
just,
before.
To be honest, and I think there are a group of women who maybe don't even want to acknowledge this. Like, I'm just, I'm attracted to older men. Mm-hmm. Like, I always have been. I remember even before I was sober, dating and being very attracted to older men. Like, I would have sex with young 20-year-old guys because that's fun. But, like, as far as, like, where I saw myself ending up, I have always been attracted to older men. And not even older successful men, because Evan was not successful. When we first started dating, I was the sugar mama, okay? I provided us with, I was working full time. He was just starting up the business, you know, and I saw his potential. And again, you know, probably not the safest bet, but I took a risk and I'm really grateful that I did, because, you know, he's obviously an amazing provider, but he is just so grounded and, I went on the Skinny Confidential a few weeks ago, and we were talking about Evan at the End with Lauren, and Lauren was like, he's a stoic. And I'm like, he is. He is a stoic. He is. And I'm really lucky.
Yeah. I wonder if the older man thing has to do with not having a father.
I don't think so. Because when I think about my dad, I think that he's fucking disgusting. I love my dad, but like I've never like.
But like the security of like having.
No, because my dad did not equal security by any means. Right. I just think that. I mean, when I had crushes, like in, you know, I was like always attracted to like the Johnny Depps and the George Clooney's and the, you know, like I was never like a Leonardo DiCaprio type of girl.
Not
like
even during Titanic.
Not even during Titanic.
Just
no,
too, like
he's just
boy.
Too pretty with the like flippy hair and. You know what I mean? He's got like the longer hair. Yeah. Just not for me. Like I always loved. Like a, you know, salt and pepper beard. And I remember yes. at 17 just finding that super attractive. Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm turning 28 in a couple weeks. Oh, my God.
Oh, stop.
I feel like an old lady, which is crazy, crazy just to think about. And then my husband's 44. So
that's a good age.
It is. Yeah. I keep telling him, like, you're in your prime, babe. Like. I'm really liking this. You know, he's really into like fitness and stuff right now. And I'm just, he's got the six pack going. And I'm like, nice. Yes, with like the scruffy gray beard. And I'm like, there is nothing. You know who everybody says he looks like? Yeah. Is the guy from the Walking Dead. The scruffy guy. Can you Google him, please, for me? What is his name? It's like Negan? I don't know. If you just type in Walking Dead cast, the guy with like the brown hair and the scruffy beard, that's everybody's always like
Andrew Lincoln.
Oh my God, your husband looks just like him. No, not the main guy.
Okay.
I don't know.
There's like five people with scruffy beards on that
cast.
God.
Jeffrey
Dean Morgan.
Yes, Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Okay, yeah.
Everybody always says that my husband is literally his twin. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Ooh, okay, now
I'll take
to
it. He's hot.
Wasn't he in P.S. I Love You?
He was.
Was he?
Yeah. Yes, he was. Now that you're saying that.
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh.
It's all right. It's I'm literally Googling okay. Lexis Haynes' husband. We're going to look it away.
You can just go on my Instagram, but yeah.
Oh, they do. Whoa.
Like crazy kind of, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, Evan, did you know that you can just Google Alexis Haynes' husband and you come up? On Google, that'll make him feel really great about himself.
He's made it.
He's made it. It's
so
great.
Let's talk recovering from reality for a minute before we get to listener questions. You know, I love your podcast.
Thank you.
Oh my God, it's my favorite.
You know, that makes me really happy to hear because I hate everything I do.
We're our own worst critics.
We are. And we're just kind of starting to figure it out. And now we've got like a flow of the podcast finally. Like this last episode, I'm like, wait, stick this in the front, this commentary here, and then the episode. And then at the end, now we're ending with a weekly affirmation for our listeners because, you know, I'm all about manifesting that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you want in your life, you know. So we're doing this weekly affirmation. Today, this week says, I am at peace with who I am as a person.
Love it.
So I'm like, so now I've kind of got this like format, right? And, you know, I really felt it going into my seventh year that I was ready to start contributing in a major way to people. I can't personally look at the fact that, 70,000 people a year are dying from addiction, and I just can't look at those numbers and like sit in my house and not that we're not doing anything, because we do have Aloe, which is our Aloe. There's my shameless plug, Aloe House Recovery Centers. If you need to go to rehab, hit me up. No, so we're doing amazing work at Aloe, and I'm super passionate about the work we're doing there, but I mean on a bigger level, like on a grander scale. So recovering from reality is a platform where we talk about recovering from life, like recovering from real life, mm-hmm. aka reality. And so we're talking about recovering from, of course, addiction. And a lot of the podcast so far has been about addiction. But now we're talking about like generational trauma and motherhood and postpartum depression and divorce and sexual abuse and, you know, all of these things that I think as a society we're dealing with that we need to recover from, because, you know, it's become super apparent that like our society, there's aspects of it that are really sick and dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in order to recover from that, we need to talk about it. And so I'm loving sitting down with various people and meeting new people and listening to their stories.
And you're such a good vessel to like spread that message. And, you know, you have kind of such a harrowing experience of your own, and you came out on the other side and you have this beautiful life. And I think because of that, people want to listen to you and people trust you. Mm-hmm. And you just, yeah. you make it like palatable. I don't know if that's the right word, but
thank you.
Like these difficult subjects.
Yeah. And I want people, the reason why too, like even sponsorship things that I get offered a lot of the times, like I won't take them because, it's something, a lot of the things that I believe in that are good for your wellness are free. Like meditation. And so like I often promote like different ways that I treat my mental health and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, and I talk about the supplements I take and things like that. But like I just really want to grow a community based on like authenticity and acceptance and love. And I'm working really, you know, I'm working really hard to do that. And so I appreciate your love and support. And I just, and I appreciate you coming on my podcast and sharing your story. I think that when we talk about our experience, then we're breaking down stigmas, mm-hmm. and that's helping people.
Yeah, absolutely. And back to like sponsorships and stuff like that. Like, I think when you stay true to like your mission and you mm-hmm. do say no and you just continue with that authenticity, like the right things are going to come and yeah. it's going to be so much more meaningful yeah. and you have a community that trusts you.
Yeah. And I'm manifesting the right companies into my life right now. Yes. Like that's really what I'm focusing on, is aligning myself, you know, like certain vitamin brands that I know are owned by like Nestle. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not going to, you know, yeah. support your, you know what I mean? Like,
it's hard.
And it's hard because a lot of the things that I do and use are smaller companies. And so they don't really have the budget, but, to, you know, but whatever. So we're figuring it out. Up until January, my Instagram feed was like just pictures of my kids and shit. Like all of a sudden I'm like, I'm going to become a brand and I'm going to start a podcast and I'm going to build an empire. And
then but you've been doing it and it's only been like 5 months, which is crazy.
Which is absolutely crazy. But I kind of went 0 to 60 and now I'm like, wait, I've got to figure out all these pieces and like actually turn this thing profitable and like make money and like actually pay my producer.
But it's like Lauren Skinny Confidential says, right? Launch fast, yes, and adjust.
Exactly. So I'm in the adjustment phase right now, and mm-hmm. Thankfully things are adjusting.
Well, let's get to some listener questions here. A lot of people asked if the producers knew that you were using drugs, which we kind of covered.
Yeah. I mean, I think it became apparent like halfway through. But like, what are you going to do? Like, I was such an asshole.
Were they like enablers or?
No.
They
just turned a blind eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did using help your anxiety at the time or worsen it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that's why I used downers. It's like, I just really wanted to shut it all down as fast as possible. And for anyone who's ever shot up heroin, you know, it's, you know, you just nod out into oblivion, you know, so worked really well for me.
What was the detox process like from heroin in jail?
Just to add
insult to injury.
So, you know, I'm really grateful that I never went never had the option to go on Suboxone because I've watched a lot of really gnarly Suboxone detoxes. I can't really compare. I would probably say like doing cold turkey and not tapering is probably worse, but like Suboxone kind of lingers. Although I did not feel normal for like 3 months. So the first time, I'll just tell you this story, and this is disgusting, but you know, we're disgusting when we're heroin addicts. But when you use heroin, like you don't go to the bathroom a lot. Like it really shuts down your entire digestive system. You also don't have regular cycles, and it kind of shuts down like a lot of stuff going on. Normal natural processes in your body just aren't working anymore. So I was in jail and I've got, you know, the cold sweats and freezing cold and just then running a fever and shaking and like what I would say are probably like little mini seizures, like where I just am convulsing and like, but like still cognizant of what's going on around me.
You just kind of lost control.
Lost control of my body for a little bit. But so I remember one night I woke up out of a sleep. And so when you're in jail, I should preface this by saying, like, you get a roll up when you walk in, which is your outfit. You get one
a week.
Yeah,
I got one.
You get like one outfit, a couple pairs of underwear, a couple pairs of socks, a sheet. You know what I mean? And that's
the mattress. Then you're
like 1-inch mattress, right? So I woke up out of my sleep and I was vomiting and having diarrhea at the same time in my outfit, in my bed. Oh. So that was probably like the worst thing that's ever happened because I was also in protective custody. So like I didn't have access to, like I couldn't just like yell for help. Like I remember like buzzing the central like police kind of hub, like where all the officers sat, like over and over and over and over and over and over, like help, help me, like as I'm like vomiting everywhere, like just so sick, like, and I had to have a trustee come in, oh, because they don't let you clean your stuff, like if you don't have the privilege of like the mop and stuff, like you can't use it. So someone had to come in. I'm just like standing there like so ill. I had a kidney infection, like it was so, from being so dehydrated, because they don't give you like water bottles, right? You just get the like the one milk and the two little juices a day. And
whoa.
It was so this is
the
worst.
You or let
so,
you change
so here's the thing so I like wipe myself down with the sheet. They didn't let me take a shower. I had to wait until, because you only get 1 hour out every 24 hours. Everybody who thinks I'm cute, like, I'm not cute. This is, like, the most disgusting thing. Everyone's going, oh, I can't even, like, picture this. So I had to wait until my 1 hour out to go shower. But here's the thing. Like, the shower water pressure is so intense in jail. And I didn't have, like, my shower shoes because I didn't have commissary come yet. So I had, like, no supplies. And when you're detoxing off opiates, like every single bit of your body hurts, like your eyeball sockets hurt. And so the water pressure was so high and the room was so freezing. So I finally got my 1 hour out and I was like just in underwear, like walking around just in underwear because I didn't want to dirty the new outfit that they gave me. And so I like walked downstairs in front of all the other girls, like covering my tits. Not that they cared, because the people in protective custody are like criminally insane or murderers. So it's not like they really give a shit. So I'm like walking down there, like down the steps. I remember being in so much pain, and I finally get into the shower. I turn it on. The water pressure is so strong and it's just like spraying off my body. I'm like, oh, this is like the worst thing ever.
And they have no sympathy, right?
No,
for addicts.
No sympathy. Nope. And so then I like got my little like towel that's the size of like a hand towel and like dried myself off freezing cold and wet. And just, I remember rolling up in a ball with wet hair on the mat and going like, just kill me now. Like, I'm just ready to go. Like, this is, it was by far the most.
How long did it last for?
Oh, just, it just was never ending. It's never ending. I mean, like, that was like the worst episode of like, you know, of expelling. I don't know. What's the right word? Like, just cleaning out.
Detoxing.
Yeah, seriously.
They have a word for it.
Like, it was just, that was the worst experience ever. I ended up getting treated for going down to the infirmary for IV fluids and being treated on an all-liquid diet for, like, 2 weeks. But it just brutal, just
crazy.
Brutal. So,
and then you used again, right?
And then I went out. Yeah. I mean, that night, that first night that I got out, I got blackout drunk. I was super paranoid, you know, and I couldn't sleep and I was having all these like issues from being locked up. And, yeah, it was like 2 weeks later, I was like back to shooting up. So, yeah, I mean, that's addiction. The second detox was just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
I did it again in there. I mean, that story is the worst. Like, I was prepared the second time. So I'd never detoxed, right? Because I just used straight. I'd never been without a substance. So I didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
So the second time around, I knew what to expect and I slept naked.
In jail?
Like, yeah, I was by myself. I was by myself in my cell 23 out of 24 hours a day. So, like, I knew what to expect. I didn't shower. I knew the water pressure. I knew, like, the commissary situation. Like, the second time I was, like, fully prepared. Like, I could train someone to, like, how to go in jail. Like, how to go to jail and survive now. You know, like, I think I've pretty much got the whole, like,
you got, like,
situation down. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's going to be my new side hustle. It's like jail proper and jail 101.
Okay, so let's end with how do you deal with trolls and people who judge you?
Well, this, you know, Brené Brown has kind of blown up over the last year. And happy 23 years of sobriety to her today. She has changed my life. I read her book. I thought it was just me. And it really, it focuses a lot on shame. And I realized that I was still carrying a lot of shame despite all of the work that I had done. And I was doing things like I didn't want my daughter's friends' parents knowing that I was a heroin addict. And I live in a very Stepford community. You've been to my house. You like drop in and it's like this little utopia. I was keeping a lot of secrets, thinking that I was protecting myself, but at the cost of my well-being and just really living not an inauthentic life, but just not really feeling like I could be who I really was because of the amount of shame that I had in my life about the choices that I've made and, you know, yada, yada. And I just felt like people wouldn't really give me a chance if they knew that I was like an ex-heroin addict, twice convicted felon, which I'm not anymore, which is
great.
Whole record cleared away.
I just read that the other day and I was like, I need to.
Just remarkable. I'll give you my attorney's phone number.
Mine is in Florida, so I got to get over there. Kennedy, want to take a trip?
Great influencer trip. Amazing influencer trip. We were talking about going to Miami, so.
Yeah, right?
Pit stop.
I carried a lot of shame and I think I've just taken away so much from her work and from her writings, and she is just such a huge, has had such a huge impact on my sobriety and well-being. What was the question again? Okay, so once I like really fully like acknowledged, once I dropped the shame, like there's nothing that that anybody could say or do that like makes me feel ashamed anymore. Like I used to feel so, people would say things, even like on this most recent episode when someone messaged me and was like, "You're a baby killer." Like I can like laugh at at the message, or not laugh at it, feel not, it would, those things used to like take over my whole day. Like I would have this adrenaline rush and feel the need to respond and all this stuff. And what I realized is that like, if I don't engage with these people and I instead just send them like love and light, then I move on. My only thing that I don't tolerate is my children, you know, especially my second daughter, who, like I said, was a high-risk pregnancy. And God, she's just a miracle. Just like, I just don't tolerate people shit talk. If you're gonna shit talk my kids, like, you're gonna get blocked. Like, then it's just
that's a whole different level.
But
troll.
You want to say whatever you want about me, does not really or doesn't at all bother me anymore. And I really attribute that to her work. And one of the things she talks about is, you know, if you're in the arena, putting yourself out there, really being authentic, trying to initiate change. Going the distance, and doing this work, the work that it takes to be authentically who you are. And, you know, then whoever's opinion, who's not in the arena, who's not doing those same things, like, their opinion doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So, like, your opinion, because you're doing this work, like, if you were to say something to me, like, criticism and anything, like, I would be like, okay, like, you know, I listen to it. Mm-hmm. But anybody else is like, I just don't take the shit. Like, I'm just not really willing to, allow that to penetrate my field. Mm-hmm. My, like, you know what I mean? And so I just literally, it's like water on a duck's back. Like, I just let it roll off. I just, you know, I just move on. It's like,
I had Rebecca Zung, who's a divorce attorney, but she's also like a master negotiator and like badass businesswoman. And she was on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she was talking about that Brené Brown mm-hmm. quote. And she was like, if you're up in the cheap seats, mm-hmm. like, and I'm down here on the field, and you're not down here getting dirty with me, like,
doesn't matter.
I don't care.
Yeah. I really don't. I really don't care. And, you know, the people doing this work, anybody who's doing this work, you know what I mean? Her book, Braving the Wilderness, anybody who's out there really braving the wilderness, meaning like on the journey to finding themselves and being a better human, I applaud you, because this work is just not at all easy, but it is so worth it. And you will find that over time, those other things, they don't matter. They don't matter. And I only have so much space in my life, and I only allow the people who I really care about to penetrate that space and to take up that space in my life and their thoughts and opinions and things like that. Other people just don't really care.
Mm, that's such good advice. Well, how can everybody find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at It's Alexis Haynes. You can find my podcast, which is on Instagram too, at Recovering From Reality. And you can go to recoveringfromreality.com to listen to the podcast. It's available on SoundCloud and Spotify and iTunes and all of that. And then you can go to alexishaynes.com to find out, you know, more about me, although this was a lot about me. I don't know if you want to find out more after today.
I think people will be genuinely curious. Intrigued.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, follow along. And, you know, if you're into like motherhood or recovery or self-development or spiritual development, then I'm your girl.
Yeah, you guys, she puts out so much valuable content, and you are so relatable and authentic, and it's so refreshing, and it's so cool to watch your journey, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Thank you.
Really. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having
me. Driving out here, one arm.
Yes. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that talk. I love talking to her, hanging out with her. She's just unapologetically herself and open and candid and opinionated. And we need more people like her, I think. So I really appreciate you tuning in. I see your reviews regarding sound quality, which I'm now recording in a studio and working on my sound quality. For the episodes that I record remotely. So I appreciate you guys bearing with me. you know, this is a journey and I'm learning as I go. And also, I get a lot of feedback that I am monotone. So I don't know if I can change that because this is how I talk. But I will try to add more inflection into my speaking. Anyway, I do appreciate you guys reviewing and rating. I really appreciate you sharing it on social media and just sharing it amongst your friends and however you do that. It really means a lot to me and it enables me to keep doing this. And it's really something that I want to keep doing. I love having these conversations. And so you guys doing your part really means a lot. Anyway, I will be back next week. Talk to you then.